Case number 12-5130, Olga Hernandez, Appellant versus Penny Sue Pritzker, Secretary, U.S. Department of Commerce. Mr. Lynch for the appellant, Mr. Ross for the appellee.
Good morning.
Good morning.
The appellant is an electrical engineer, and about 2 weeks after she made a complaint of discrimination, she was removed from her job and sent to work on
Did she ask to be changed?
She complained. Yes, she complained
about. It's a little rough to say she was removed from her job, isn't she?
Well, she complained about discrimination.
She asked to be transferred out of her job. Right.
Right. She didn't ask to be
transferred her out of her job.
That's right. But she didn't ask to be transferred to a job she couldn't perform. Right. Moving an electrical engineer to work as a chemical engineer would be like asking me, a litigation trial attorney, to go run an M&A practice at some large defense firm. We're asking a trial attorney to do a trust and estate work and then being graded on it 3 months later. Three months later, after they put her on a detail, they fired her. Sending an electrical engineer to work as a chemical engineer and then grading her on job performance 3 months later, it's just plain wrong. It was a self-fulfilling prophecy. They removed her. Okay, the lower court in this case exceeded what it was supposed to do on summary judgment. Summary judgment is supposed to identify an issue of fact. In this case, went far beyond and simply we identified issues of fact. The timing in this case couldn't be more stark. All right. A few months after a complaint, she's removed. A few months later, she's fired. We have temporal proximity. We identified issues of fact for the court, and the court simply went through it, struck it down, and substituted its own opinion on these issues of fact for what a jury should have decided. Because it really should have been for a jury to decide if 2 weeks after someone complains, they're removed to a job they can't perform, and then 3 months later they're fired because they couldn't perform a job they're not qualified for, right, constituted retaliation. I mean, but for her complaint about discrimination, she would not have been moved. But for her complaint, she would not have been moved to a job she wasn't trained or qualified for.
Did she object at the time immediately?
She didn't object. I think you've got to consider that in the federal service, if the agency directs you to move to a job.
You agreed with Judge Santel. She asked to be moved. Not to that job, but she asked to be moved, right?
That's correct.
That's right?
That's correct.
Okay, and she must have recognized immediately that electrical engineering and chemical engineering are different, right?
That's correct.
Did she say anything immediately?
She did not complain immediately.
And did she ask to be moved to a different place? Did she have in mind a different kind of transfer?
Well, where she's transferred to is not up to an employee. The agency controls...
If there was no other space for her.
There were openings, and it's in the record. There were openings that the agency could have moved her to.
What was the evidence in the record?
Of the jobs that they were...
Yes.
There's deposition testimony.
That's JA page 130. There were openings in the encryption.
JA page 130 says exhibit. Exhibit 1, that's all it says. What paragraph are you talking about?
Hernandez Declaration, paragraph 23.
So that is a hearsay statement.
That there were...
It's hearsay, and it would not be useful for summary judgment.
Well, where...
The Supreme Court has held that hearsay is not sufficient for summary judgment.
I understand, but I think that the point not to be lost here is that federal agencies control where employees are moved.
I understand, but the question I asked was... What is the evidence that there was another place? She didn't say, move me only if you have another place. She said, move me. Now the question is there another place?
Well, it would be up to the agency to identify a job that she was trained and qualified for that they could have moved her to. No different than if you're moving a disabled person and reassigning them on a reasonable accommodation. The agency has all of that information, all that evidence. It's not available to employees at agencies.
If they don't have a job that fits what she wants, they can't possibly have a duty to transfer her into one, can they?
Well, what they could have done was
simply... If they don't have a job, they can't have one. They can't go to the furniture store.
Of course. That goes without saying. But they could have stopped the harassment.
So what is the evidence that such a vacancy existed?
Well, they could have simply stopped the harassment, stopped the discrimination.
What is the evidence that such a vacancy existed?
I believe it's at 130 that there were openings in the encryption and radar departments.
130 is exhibit
one. So you're talking about paragraph 23 again.
That's correct.
So yes, you had the opportunity to notice Mr. Pender and Mr. Routier for depositions. Did you notice them? So you could have overcome the hearsay problem by deposing either of those people. Did you try to?
Discovery was taken, and I believe that the issue that you're seizing upon about whether there were positions that she could have been sent to or not, I think ignores the fact that when someone is working in an agency and complains about discrimination, the obligation is on the employer, right, to...
That's not the argument you've made to... I'm not seizing on this, the fun of it. I'm seizing it because... Your argument in your brief says that there were other available positions. That's your argument. I'm not coming up with this argument. That's your argument. And the Supreme Court has said, in this kind of situation, you have to provide something more than hearsay. You have to have a person saying, I would, if I were on the stand, testify to this in an admissible form. The way you could have done that would have been to put Mr. Pender or Mr. Routier in a deposition and get him to say there was an opening. Did the judge stop you from doing that?
No, the judge did not stop us from doing that. In the declaration, though, I believe that the appellant testified that a co-worker, Ramsey Routier, told her about the positions in radar. That would not be hearsay.
Why not?
Because that's an admission.
Well, do we have that a co-worker has the ability to bind the agency?
Well, a co-worker's statement would be a declaration against interest.
Why?
Because the co-worker works for the employer, and there's no reason for that person to be lying.
That would be an exception
to the hearsay.
It's not a statement against interest. It's not against the... Routier doesn't have any interest one way or the other in this case.
Well, it's a declaration against the interest in terms of the argument that you're making here, that there was no other positions available for her. Right? If the agency is going to take the position that there were no positions for her, and one of its employees said that there were, that is at odds with each other.
It's at odds with the agency. It's not at odds with the individual.
Well,
can we switch to another topic?
It's not against the interest of the deponent, correct?
Well, it contradicts the argument that there were no positions available.
That's a different question. If it's a declaration against interest, it has to be against the interest of the source, the speaker.
Well, it supports the appellant's position.
Not if it's not admissible, it doesn't.
Well, if it's a co-worker statement, it would be generally considered to be admissible at trial.
I suppose if it were the executive of a corporation, who was therefore a representative and could bind the corporation, or at least whose statement would be contrary to the interest of the corporation, your point would have more force. We don't know who these people are.
About the exhaustion question? About the exhaustion question?
Yes.
I'm wondering whether the district court misunderstood your argument with respect to the probationary position. As I understood your argument, that change was not a separate argument. You say the claim regarding the change in status is not a new claim, but rather a detail. Ms. Hernandez's claim that she was wrongfully terminated. Is that right?
Yeah, I believe...
So that as long as the wrongly terminated issue was timely, the probationary issue is evidence, part of the argument about why termination is wrong. Is that right?
That's correct. It is the way it was handled in terms of changing that document right before they fired her. To us, it shows further evidence that a jury should consider whether or not the timing of this is suspect, and whether or not that act in and of itself on its own is actionable which I think is what was argued,
yes, yes.
Is really, to me, beside the point, because all it would have done would have turned her into a non-probationary employee and given her the due process rights and the ability to go to the Merit System Protection Board, as opposed to being a probationary employee where they could fire her without due process. Because if she were considered non-probationary, they would have had to given her a proposal letter and given her the right to respond and then appeal it to the Merit System Board. I see that I'm out of time.
Let me just make sure you have your argument on that point. If the agency was, I know you dispute this, if the agency was indisputably correct that that her original SF-50 was erroneous, and if they said, we want this corrected quickly because otherwise her probationary period will have run, so they want it corrected specifically in order to be able to terminate her at will, why would that be a violation rather than just a correction of a record that would have restored them to where they would have, should have been in the first place, the ability to terminate her at will?
Well, your question contains the if the agency is correct in its decision.
Yeah, that's another issue that you
contest.
Right,
I don't believe it was correct. It hired her, it reinstated her, and it reinstated her under the section of the law 315.801 that we pointed out. I believe
that if you're correct on that, then the change of status, you don't have to argue about whether the change of status was discriminatory because it was mistaken.
Well,
right?
I think
if it was not mistaken, it's not clear to me how it could be discriminatory.
Well, taken on its own in a vacuum, it loses perspective. What we're talking about here is, what is it, 4 months after she filed a discrimination complaint, they go back and start modifying her employment records.
Right, well, let's just say that the supervisor says, you know, she's been here only a few months. I'm going to get rid of her because she's not capable of doing the work. Finds out that she was given a classification that prohibits getting rid of her. Then says, well, that is erroneous, that classification. I want it corrected. It's corrected, and then he gets rid of her. So the whole thing is motivated by the desire to get rid of her if she's a probationary employee, if she should have been classified as probationary.
Well, I think what you're saying is accurate, but in the context of this case, it points out why summary judgment should have been denied, because the whole question is what motivated the agency. And we pointed out...
Only if there's something adverse as to which motivation is relevant. If there's nothing adverse but a correction of, and rather just a correction of a record, then there's nothing about which to complain, really.
Well, but the whole point of the case in retaliation is that it's our position that but for her complaint, they wouldn't have gone through this process and looked at her files and then modified what they did. They're the ones, their documentation showed that they hired her under the reinstatement exception of the statute that I referenced. They went and changed it. All right, to suit their needs, which is what you're saying. They decide they want to get rid of her, and they change the documentation so that they didn't have to give her a proposal like any other non-probationary employee would have had. They wouldn't have had to face a response from a lawyer like me saying that you're a response for proposed removal, and they removed from her the right to go to the Merit System Protection Board, which means that we wouldn't have been in court. We would have been over at the federal agency.
Thank you, sir.
I have a question on the relationship between the CFRs on this topic. So the government's position is that 315.801 is the one that governs first year of a service of an employee who's given a career or career conditional appointment, its probationary period when the employee was appointed from a competitive list. They said the person is listed as a career appointment, and the government's position is she was appointed from a competitive list. You argue that even if they're right about this, that section 315.201 governs. Is that right?
Yeah,
you argued in your.
It's our position that she was reinstated, and then if you look at 315.801.2, it says that when someone's reinstated and they completed a previous probationary period with another already, that they don't have to serve another probationary period. And I can tell you that my reading of these different CFRs,
no matter what the break in term.
Well, I see that other section, but it says here that was reinstated under subpart D unless during any period of service which affords a current basis for reinstatement, the employee completed a probationary period. She had completed the probationary period. I'm not saying that these CFRs are clear. They're not clear to me because I don't see anything that says that one is to be read over another or which takes takes precedence. And I think that points out whether or not what the agency did in changing her her status, whether that was motivated by her EEOC complaint. I mean, that's the whole point of this whole case, was that in a short span of time.
No, that's not the whole point. If, as Judge Ginsburg suggests or asks, it is correct that they were correcting an incorrect document, it doesn't matter what their motivation was, does it?
In terms
of, to be an adverse action taken because of a wrong motivation, and if this is just a correction, it's not an adverse action, but the action will no matter what they did.
Well, the adverse action, we can all agree, is the firing. And all this did was paper the firing in a way that removed any due process rights to the appellant.
Okay, thank you. We'll hear from the government.
May it please the court. The agency requests that this court affirm the district court's ruling for three reasons. First, the agency had a legitimate, non-retaliatory reason for terminating Ms. Hernandez's employment, i.e. that Ms. Hernandez continually made mistakes capable of compromising national security, and the record contains no evidence indicating that the agency's stated reason was pretextual. Secondly, the agency had a legitimate, non-retaliatory reason for detailing Ms. Hernandez to the Chemical and Biological Controls section, i.e. that the detail came at her request and the detail was not an adverse action. Finally, the court should affirm the district court's ruling regarding the correction of Ms. Hernandez's probationary status claim because Ms. Hernandez failed to exhaust that claim and the record contains no evidence to refute the agency's legitimate non-retaliatory reason for correcting her status. First, Your Honor, the agency had a legitimate non-retaliatory reason for terminating Ms. Hernandez's employment because she made mistakes capable of compromising national security. It's undisputed in the record that Ms. Hernandez made mistakes throughout her tenure with the agency, in both sections within the agency, and both before she filed her initial complaint and after she filed her initial complaint. Also, contrary to opposing counsel's argument, it's clear from the record that Ms. Hernandez was not removed because she simply was unable to do complex evaluations in the Chemical and Biological Control section, but that she was actually removed from the agency because she showed a lack of detail necessary to safeguard national security. Both before the filing of her complaint, as evidenced in the record on pages 68, 70, and through 71, it shows that Ms. Hernandez had made mistakes in her commodity classifications by simply confirming information regarding the commodities. She failed on multiple occasions to look and correct the information regarding the individuals who might actually be receiving nuclear agents from the United States. And she also failed to confirm information regarding the list of transactions of information that was being sent out. These are the type of details that could simply be done by simply looking at the individual's names and confirming who that individual is, not necessarily a complex evaluation of what the chemical or nuclear agents were. After the filing, as evidenced on the record in pages JA 73 through 76, it indicates that Ms. Hernandez continued to make these same type of simple mistakes showing a lack of detail. She was not conducting proper evaluation of the end users to determine exactly who these chemical or biological agents were going to. She also was making mistakes by cutting and pasting information from one application to another, and by doing so, listing the wrong actual details of the agency's rationale for either agreeing to process an export application or denying it. These are the type of simple mistakes that Ms. Hernandez fails to correct. And the evidence also shows that Ms. Hernandez doesn't dispute that she made these types of mistakes throughout her tenure with the agency. And finally, the evidence in the record indicates that it was these type of mistakes that showed up on her final review and were the basis of terminating her because she was unable to safeguard national security. The agency also had a legitimate non-retaliatory reason for detailing Ms. Hernandez, i.e. that the detail came at Ms. Hernandez's request. Now, counsel claims that federal agencies control where an individual would be moved, and so Ms. Hernandez had no control over exactly where she would be moved. But the record stands at odds with counsel's argument. The record indicates that the same very individual who Ms. Hernandez now alleges retaliated against her in transferring her first explained to her that he felt transfer was, quote, the most extreme option and should only be used as a last resort. The record also indicates on JA pages 110 through 111 that same individual requested that Ms. Hernandez attempt to reconcile with the individuals in the Nuclear, Missile, and Technology Division and not seek a transfer. That same individual asked Ms. Hernandez to provide him with a list of remedies short of transfer in order for him to go through that list to see if there was something else that could be done. Finally, and most importantly, that same individual asked Ms. Hernandez that if she was going to be transferred, to provide him a list of the offices that she would be interested in transferring to. He asked her both in person, and he asked her both in writing, and that's evidenced by the record.
What was the JA page for that?
JA page 110 through 111.
Does that cover the asking her in writing?
Your Honor, it does not cover the asking her in writing.
Where does that appear? Perhaps your colleagues can pass you that information later on.
Okay, yes, Your Honor. But the record does indicate that when Ms. Hernandez responded to him in writing, that she did not indicate exactly where she would like, she did not provide a list of the places that she would like to be transferred, but simply stated that she wanted to be transferred and did not provide a list of the offices that she was looking to be transferred into. And that's evidenced by Ms. Hernandez's own testimony. And JA page 62, where she acknowledges that she had a specific request to provide the actual offices that she could be transferred or detailed into, and that she failed to provide a list of offices that she could be transferred into.
Is the original hostile work environment claim that originates before the transfer, has that dropped out of the case as it's now in front of us?
Yes, Your Honor, that is not part of the claims that Ms. Hernandez has raised.
Because it would seem a little too facile to say that the government could create a hostile work environment, then give someone the opportunity to transfer and be absolved. But that's out of the case.
Your Honor, that's not the case before this court. Okay. And I won't go into the facts regarding the hostile work environment, but it was dismissed initially at the district court level because there wasn't any evidence really of a hostile work environment. Despite these allegations that Ms. Hernandez now raises that there were other offices that she could have been better suited for, the record actually contains no evidence outside of Ms. Hernandez's own hearsay statement that these positions were even available at the time. And even considering Ms. Hernandez's hearsay statement, there's no evidence whatsoever, not even Ms. Hernandez's allegations, that the person who was responsible for making the decision was aware that these positions were available or that these other offices had the proper workload able to take on Ms. Hernandez as an employee. Finally, Your Honor, the agency requests that this court affirm the district court's decision regarding the correction of Ms. Hernandez's probationary status. First of all, the correction of probationary status claim was not exhausted. Ms. Hernandez does not dispute.
But what do you say about the point that it's not a separate claim? Their brief below said it wasn't a separate claim, so it's not a new claim, it's part of the other claim. It's not in their complaint as a separate claim. Their brief on appeal, it's not a separate claim. It's just part of the evidence for the termination claim.
Your Honor, to the extent it's part of the evidence of the termination claim, that it does not need to be exhausted. However, at the district court
level. That's what the court held in Morgan.
Yes, Your Honor. Right. But however, at the district court level, Ms. Hernandez was requesting relief separately based on that claim. So that's why we briefed it separately.
Because I looked at the brief below, and in the brief below, she also made exactly the same statement. This is in plaintiff's opposition to the defendant's motion for summary judgment. The claim regarding change in status is not a new claim, but rather a detail of plaintiff's claim that defendant wrongly terminated her. It doesn't sound like she's asking for a separate relief. It sounds like that's a detail of the termination claim.
Yes, Your Honor. But in our reply brief, we indicated that it appeared to us that she was asking for separate relief. And it wasn't clear, at least to counsel, from the record that she was not seeking some sort of separate relief, and even if the court dismissed her termination claim.
Questions? No. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do we have any rebuttal time? All right, we'll give you another 2 minutes, if you want.
I'll just point out in the record at JA-113, this is follows the minutes of that the agency took of a meeting with Olga Hernandez. It was referenced by counsel as to where she asked to be transferred. This is the listing of what appellant had asked for when you were asking me, did she want to get out? Was that the number one thing?
You said JA-113.
JA-113. Yeah, if this is Exhibit 18. If you look at it, it does talk about a lot of things that she would like. And number one is a physical move from a present environment, but number two is provide sexual harassment training, change rating. There's quite a few things that she had asked for. And this document was a follow-up on the meeting, which is reflected in minutes that were taken on JA-108.
As far as where she was going to be transferred to, the only thing she said to him, if she'd like to be asked about a summer, she'd already been told that her supervisor Spears did not have the authority to transfer her out of Commerce.
Right.
She makes no request for anything in Commerce different from the position that the transferred her into.
Right. The purpose that I'm pointing this out is not to reiterate the discussions we had before, just to point out that she did identify other remedies and as alternatives. It didn't say this is an ultimatum.
As far as the argument that the transfer into this particular slot was a bad slot, she never came up with some other slot.
No.
Okay, thank you.
Where on 110 was the passage you just quoted?
He's talking about 113.
Were you at 113?
It's 113, okay. Your Honor. Yeah, 110 was mentioned by counsel in his argument as this is the minutes of a meeting that Mr. Goldman had with appellant.
Yeah.
And 113 is a document that summarized the various things that she had asked for as remedial measures.
Right. Does here 110, it does say, and this is the agency's own document, that Ms. Hernandez replied that she cannot suggest a transfer. She would need more information. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
I will take the matter under submission. Thank you.